Hi, and welcome to the Passionistas Project podcast. We're Amy and Nancy Harrington, and today we're talking to Billy Best, author of the memoir Crazy Farm Wife. Billy gave up a successful corporate career to become a farmer in Western Massachusetts. But when her lifelong partner and husband passed away from cancer, Billy found herself starting over, indulging her passions, and looking for her purpose. So please welcome to the show, Billy Best.
Hi, Nancy. Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
What's the one thing you're most passionate about?
What I am most passionate about has been changing over time. And I realized that in the intro, the life you're describing there, I was passionate about farming. But I sold my farm in 2016, and I lost a lot. And to feel okay about what I lost, I had to reinvent myself. And you can hear the teary voice. I lost a lot. But you know, I'm here, it's now, I'm cool. And aging is a really interesting adventure that has got to change. So my new passion is to completely disrupt aging, because I want a different version of elderhood than my mother and my grandmother had before me.
So what does that mean for you? What do you want that to be for you?
It's interesting because everything I wanted is changing, right? I'm 65. I'm in a completely different body than I was in 10 years ago. My husband died 10 years ago. I was a farmer. I was putting in 8, 12, 14 hours a day on the farm. I was living with animals on the edge of the forest. I was hiking in the woods. I was pretty fearless about being alone in the dark in nature. And I was feeling strong, like really robust physically and mentally. Well, I think I am strong and robust mentally. But around the time I was 60, which was 2014, I just started to notice that I was getting tired. And I was having aches and pains. And my hips were sending really nasty messages to my brain. And it was unpleasant. And it took a lot of the fun out of farming when I hit the place physically where I was just really wearing out my body parts. And I had to choose, am I going to replace these parts or am I just going to take care of them and try and hold on to them as long as possible? And the other thing was that I realized I was kind of living in my past. I was living in my dream house that I bought with my husband. I was still sleeping in that same bed. It was the same place, and that history was really like a wardrobe. And I also needed a different financial picture. I was allowing myself to be in debt for years. There was part of me that kind of thought it was cool. And then I had this interesting thought, like, what's worse than aging? Well, it's being poor and aging. You know, I did not want to end up financially unstable, living a high-risk lifestyle, when I was getting Medicare. So I had to change my whole picture. And changing my picture was how I learned about aging, the role the government plays in it. You know, I started getting those AARP magazines, I think, when I turned 50, and I would just wing them in the trash in the post office. I did not want to be seen with those. I still say I don't need a senior's discount at the grocery store. I don't want a senior's discount. I don't even want to be talking about that. Why are you even asking me that? You know? So things are different. I'm 65, but I'm the same person I've always been on the inside. And I have the same values in general that I had in my 40s. And I could live another 30 years. My grandmother lived to be 103. 103. I'm 65. That's like, what, 38 more years? That's another lifetime. I mean, I could raise some adult children. What am I going to do? The beauty of it is we have longevity, but the truth of it is technology's given us longevity without purpose. Like, what is the value of a 65-year-old uterus, right? And society hasn't figured out the answer to that question. So my passion these days is to really highlight these issues, to verbalize the stuff that I hear women talking about among themselves and really put it out there in the public forum and have a public discussion about our perceptions of aging, the prejudice against older people, the ageism that's built into society and our structures, the way women are made to feel unattractive, the way women feel forced to like get cosmetic surgery and dye their hair and have boob jobs and get the fat sucked out of their stomach. Nobody really wants to do any of that. You know, why are we doing it? Well, some of us are doing it to keep our jobs. Cool. Because you have to work in the world of men and you have to at least try to be appealing so they at least know you're not their mother. Other people are doing it for their own ego, and that's cool. Any woman who's like serving her ego, more power to her. But so many women are trying to hold back the physical changes of aging because they're shamed by our society and culture, because they're made to feel uncomfortable and unwanted. And that's wrong, but that's also wasteful. That's also economically inefficient. That isn't the best use of our resources. And when I look at the world today and see that probably one of the biggest problems on the planet today is toxic masculinity, you know? I mean, the world has become one big dick fight. And I really think elder women are like we're the sandbags, you know? We're the team that goes in to safely detonate the bomb. And here we are. How do we do that? Well, one way we do that is to speak up. Just speak up. Another way we do that is to be present. Like, go there, be seen. Don't hide out. Don't let your feelings about not looking as good as you did 60 years ago stop you from going out and being present and showing your face at public events, political events, social events, on the street. We need to be present and we need to be seen. And the first step to do that is to actually do that. I also think we can raise our voices. I mean, there was a huge intellectual resource that's sort of being shelved, warehoused, that needs to be exposed right now, a softer, kinder, gentler approach to life. When the world is better for elder women, it's better for everybody. It's not like I'm asking for something that's just good for me. I mean, the whole idea of the world being more accepting of age, more accommodating of vulnerabilities, livable communities, livable wages, public safety, healthcare, housing, a clean environment, less cancer, less heart disease, less diabetes. You know, these are all things elder women would benefit from, although it would have been nice to have all that 30 years ago. But even so, we would benefit from it today, but everybody would benefit. I think in a way, we have the least to lose in fighting for it. We are beyond trying to be the sex pot that attracts the man of her dreams or the woman of her dreams, whatever gender, pick one. But we are past the point of depending on our physical selves to be our power base. Our power base now is our brain, and our brain is amazing right now because we have so much more confidence in ourselves. These things that I'm saying to you are things I think a lot about, but this is not like public knowledge. I mean, you could find a group of women my age and they'd all be going, yeah, got it. But I don't think you're gonna hear this from somebody on a platform in front of a microphone in front of 100,000 people on the Capitol Mall. And yet it's kind of what we need to fix things. So that's what I'm passionate about.
So what do we do? What steps are you taking?
Well, the first thing that I'm trying to do is expose these ideas with my blog. I've always been a writer. In high school, I was voted class arguer. So I'm comfortable stepping out and being rebellious and disruptive. But now I really feel like I want to talk to other women about this. And, you know, I live in a studio apartment in Portland. It's hard to come in contact with big groups of women until I found them on Facebook. And there are millions of women my age on Facebook talking about all these things. And they're organized into affinity groups that makes it easy for me to connect with them. So I started blogging almost 6 months ago. And I'm trying to express my own point of view and new points of view, but I'm also trying to be responsive to what I see and hear. And I feel an obligation to my gender after spending half of my life wishing I was a man. After spending half of my life feeling cheated because I was born with tits, which, you know, now I can see could have been a pretty big advantage. Yeah, maybe they were. But it didn't start out that way. For a very long time, I felt like I was always fighting to get where I wanted to be and always being told that there was no place there for a woman. I won a writing contest when I was 12 years old, and the judge shook my hand and said, "I've never heard of a girl named Billy, and if I'd known you were a girl, you wouldn't be getting this award." Okay, it was 1967 in Illinois. What do you want? But there you go. In my high school in the 70s, we weren't allowed to wear pants. Girls, women, weren't allowed to wear slacks. Hello? We were told it didn't make any sense for us to go to college because we were just going to have babies. Now, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has covered this territory more eloquently than I. And so this part of history is known. But here I am, I have a chance to compensate for that and make sure that never happens again. So my blog each week is really a chance for me to bit by bit expose my thinking in a way that I hope is kind, but also humorous. There's a lot of bad news in the media these days, and I think people are a little oversaturated with the drama. And so even though in my head I could rant and rave about some of these issues, I try not to rant and rave in my blog. I try to limit the length, make it a 3-minute read, always be humorous in some way or other, and to have there be sort of an emotional payoff so that once people know my name and they know that I write these short pieces, that they don't have to worry about me wrecking their day about saying something really shitty in print. So that's the blog, you know, and it's going pretty well. And I'm seeing that in just 6 months on Facebook, which isn't what it used to be, people are dropping off, people are disillusioned. Doesn't matter how many friends it says you have, probably 10% of them are only still really active users. So I do witness that this social environment is in decline. And yet, for women over 50, women over 60, and now I'm discovering women over 70, Facebook is a social community that's thriving. And I really appreciate the women that I'm in touch with on Facebook. They are changing my life, and I hope I'm changing theirs. I hope I'm shining a little light in their window and just making them feel better about the day. But also, we aren't powerless. We might be invisible today, but we're not going to remain so, because the The revolution in aging is in process right now. Disrupt aging is a hashtag. It's not a new idea. It's not something I invented. I'm adding my voice to it, and I really hope that I'm adding the particular perspective of elder women to the revolution.
You were saying you grew up in a generation where you're going to get married, you're going to have a nice husband, don't worry so much about the career. So how did you forge your own path in that regard, and what did you do for a career in the beginning of your journey?
Well, my career was mostly happenstance. I left home at 17. I started waitressing. I ended up in New York City. I had a friend who was in a rock band. Her band was playing in New York. They had band meetings at my apartment. I had a rich boyfriend, because of course you do. Why else be in New York City? And I got him to give $500 to the band to pay for some broken equipment. And they hired me. You know, I moved to Boston. I moved into the Luna House in Newton Highlands. You know, 8 people in the band and 3 of us in the road crew. I was the road manager. And that is how I learned the music business, by just moving to Boston and living with a band and starting to help with the issues of booking clubs, getting the band on stage, keeping the equipment in repair, and eventually trying to help them get airplay on the radio and then get a record deal. And that peaked with getting a record deal with Handshake Records, which was a subsidiary of, well, technically CBS and Epic. The record label went bankrupt right after our record came out. From managing bands, I worked at Strawberries, which was a record store that sold vinyl. And then in the 80s, when I was working there, cassette tapes came out, and they had to change all their neon signs to say Strawberries Records and Tapes. And then CDs came out, and they just gave up with that. And then it all fell apart from there. I mean, you know the story of technology. It just all fell apart. But I went from Strawberries Records and Tapes to Boston Rock, where I met Nancy. And we put out a music publication, kind of a tabloid about the alternative music scene, locally in Boston, but also regionally and national, because at that time, the music business was really changing. And people, bands, musicians were becoming increasingly empowered to shepherd their own careers through the system. Radio stations were discovering what was called local music. And the club scene in Boston was thriving. So I worked there for a few years, and that was great. And then I got a job at Boston University working for their for-profit division as the director of marketing. And I worked there for 4 years. And the thing that happened that was super serendipitous during that time was that, like many colleges, maybe all colleges and universities, BU had a computer program. And it had Apple computers and IBM computers available at special prices for students. And it was my job to market them to the students. I had to learn the difference between Apple and IBM, the difference between the platforms. And then as new technology features rolled out, I had to learn what they were. I learned how advertising and marketing worked at Apple and IBM. And that put me in an amazing position to get a job with Digital Equipment Corporation, which today you can't even believe that somebody would name their company that. And then this new thing was being invented, which was so amazing. It was called the World Wide Web. And it was so cool. And businesses were terrified. Oh my God, the privacy was going to be invaded. Their secrets would be out. Somebody was going to get in their database. Everybody would know everything that was going on. They would lose control. Their brands would be stolen. Their advertising ideas would be stolen. And so for a few years on one track, as a marketing person, we had to prove to them that all that was going to happen anyway. So you might as well know the technology you're going to use while that happens. And on the other hand, We were the first, one of the first corporations to market a search engine. There were search engines before Google. The first search engine that I was aware of was called AltaVista. And Google was kind of based on that. I mean, in those days, personal computers were called personal computers. And Apple was kind of a joke because it didn't work with anything. And cell phones were just being invented. And we didn't call them cell phones. We called them mobile phones. So all that technology happened. I got to ride through that. And I rode the wave all the way to New York City to work in for a .com and trying to be part of that whole scene of IPOs and founders and investors and making big money. And for a very, very brief amount of time, I made enough money to buy a farm. 9/11 happened. It broke my heart just the way it kind of broke our nation. And I was unemployed overnight. I slid into a depression. And what got me out of depression was hanging out on my farm. It took about a year of job hunting to get back into the corporate world while I was cleaning barns and planting gardens and walking in the woods to realize that I didn't want my career to feel like a game anymore and that farming didn't feel like a game to me. It really felt like my life's purpose. We lived there for 18 years, but for the last 7 years, I farmed alone. So my husband died in 2009, and I farmed until 2016. And I sold the farm like 7 years after he died. And those 7 years of farming alone with cows and chickens and goats and sheep and dogs and cats on the edge of the wild forest was, I think, the most important experience of my life. If we could distinguish what's important from emotional attachment to human beings and love and all that, it was an incredible education in this idea that I take with me or bring with me from technology. And the idea is that nature is the operating system here, folks. On planet Earth, nature is the operating system. And if what you're doing doesn't work with the operating system, it's gonna crash. And so many of the applications of industry, the projects of men aren't working with nature. Too many of the things that we're doing on planet Earth are hostile to nature. We are exploiting nature as though she was an unlimited resource, and she isn't. She is finite, just like us, just like this planet. And we need to evolve towards solutions that regenerate instead of exploit and are compatible with nature. An idea that's so obvious on your cell phone, but people don't think about how it actually applies to the whole wide world.
We're Amy and Nancy Harrington, and you're listening to the Passionistas Project podcast in our interview with Billy Best. Visit her website, billybest.com, to learn about her blog, It's Not Easy Being Fabulous, and her memoir, Crazy Wife Farm. Now here's more of our interview with Billy.
Tell us a little bit about the book, Crazy Wife Farm.
Right before I sold the farm, I started writing a memoir about it because I realized this huge piece of my life is going to disappear. And also, my marriage was pretty interesting. Of course, it didn't end how I thought it would. Chet's death was exotic. He was an artist and a performer, and he wanted his death to be performance art. And so we made it that, and I was his producer. So that was pretty interesting. And then after that, I did a one-woman show for a while called The Widow Wears Red Pajamas. That was weird and successful. But at the time, I realized it wasn't totally honest, and I didn't want my whole life to be about my history and about death. And again, I had this sense that I really needed to step out of the past get someplace new, re-experience myself as a human, separate from marriage, career, and all those years of caregiving, and really rediscover myself. Like, who am I? What am I doing here? What's the same about me and what's different? And, you know, here I am talking to you guys because what's different is that I'm 65. What's the same about me is I still have this, like, urge to rebel and this urge to disrupt the system and just make change in a way that maybe is a little faster and more destructive than a lot of people would like. That's how I got here. And the book, it ends with me being here. So it starts when I met Chet in the music business and kind of follows that technology trail. And one reason it follows that trail, to repeat myself a little bit, is because technology, the internet, the idea of the internet is a network of networks and a neural network and an expanding, almost living organism just by virtue of its design. To me, that's what I saw in nature, and that really intrigued me. That was my real mission in farming, was to expose this idea of living in harmony with nature, just the way you try to have all your apps work with your phone. It's not any different. And I left that. Here I am, and what am I doing? Why am I here? What's the point? I have this experience of having been a hottie. I was really attractive and it was a thing in my life. And now I have this experience of not so much, and looking at the world that I was in then and the world I'm in now, and just realizing how predatory that world was and how that's not really right. And how the dominance of men has served its purpose. Nature designed us this way. We can't blame men. It's nobody's fault. It's not about men being bad. Men are fabulous. It's about this idea of the genders equalizing, blending, about gender being more fluid, of all of us being a little more relaxed about gender and how it comes and goes. And opening the door to power, to people of greater diversity. And that includes elder women. That really includes elder women. So we have a few of them out there, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Angela Merkel, Christine Lagarde, huge, amazing woman. Hardly anybody knows who she is. Of course, there's the women in the Senate. Love Elizabeth Warren. Loved Hillary Clinton, but, you know, we need a dozen more. We can't be defined by those five women. We need 1,000 more. It needs to be a common thing for that hall of nations at the United Nations in New York to be filled with women, because that's where you really see the truth of the world when you start to look at international politics and you look at all those economic forums and the G7 and the G8 and the G4 and poof, it's all guys. That's what's wrong. So I'm here to push on that because I don't have anything to lose. You know, it might be easier because I don't have a husband, and so I don't have to always be apologizing for the stuff I'm saying. So maybe I'm in a good phase. Feels pretty good.
So when you were in that male-dominated world, whether it was the music industry or the tech industry, how did you navigate that as a woman?
It was very challenging. Of course I wanted to look good, because looking good was a huge advantage in many ways. But at the same time, it made me a target. It made me a target for sexual innuendo, sexual abuse, and sexual assault. And so it's a double-edged sword. I think I was lucky that I'm really smart, and that it, when it came down to it, the men I worked with, they might have liked how I looked, but they realized that I was really smart, and it was to their advantage to have me around. And in the end, my strongest partnerships were with the men who made the greatest use of my brain. And that was really fortunate.
What would you want to tell younger women about aging gracefully before they get there?
Well, don't be afraid of it. It's going to happen. Plan for it. Use sunscreen. But don't be afraid of it and don't try to hide it, because I'll tell you, that's a weakness in the chain. And if you feel like you're not as good because you're getting older, you know, the way a dog smells fear, men smell that. Men smell, they have a strong competitive sense. They know when a colleague is weak, and fear of aging is a weakness. So the first thing is lean into it, be proud of it, don't ever be shamed by it, and use it to your advantage. Because the older you get, honestly, I think this age that I'm at now, 65, it actually has a little power in the marketplace. And so be ready to use that.
Is there one lesson that you've learned on your journey so far that really sticks with you?
There was a point in writing my memoir that I realized that it was just like a long list of mistakes. So many mistakes. Career mistakes, healthcare mistakes, mistakes in love, mistakes in marriage, lots of mistakes in farming, mistakes about myself and understanding myself. And I just don't think I would have the wisdom that I had today if I hadn't made all those mistakes. There's only one path to this moment that we're in right now, and it's the path we took. And every one of my mistakes have contributed to my success. That's something I think we need to be taught much earlier in life, so that our mistakes have more value as teachable moments and aren't really such humiliations. Although they were pretty humiliating. But whatever, you know, you get over it and you move on, and hopefully you don't make the same mistakes twice, at least not three times.
So looking back at your journey so far, is there one decision that you think was the most courageous that sort of changed your trajectory?
I think selling the farm was a really courageous move, because I was so identified with that piece of land, that house, myself as a farmer. I was working in sustainable agriculture. I was highly visible. I had a blog about farming for a while. I had a radio show about farming. My farm was a destination for people to just drive by and look at the animals. I had customers, and my farm was like a great party house. I had lots of house guests. I did Airbnb for a while, very successfully. But I just couldn't see how I was going to shake off being a widow, and how was I going to get out of the economic hole I dug myself into without selling the farm and leaving the farm. And look, I drove around for 15 months, 10,000 miles before I got to Portland, just driving, just thinking about all the same stuff I'm talking to you about. And it was very, very hard. Also, I gave up all my possessions, all my furniture, all my clothes, all my tchotchkes, all my antiques, everything. Everything that wasn't in my car on the day I sold the farm, except my books, my photos and my journals, and like my tax files. But otherwise, it's all gone. I am in a room where all the furniture in this room, I bought in the last year and a half, and I don't care about any of it. And I have a different view of possessions. You know, they are not me. I am not them. And when I leave this place, I don't think I'm taking anything with me. And I intend to leave this place. I mean, I'm sure in my future, there's another place I'm going to want to be. And you know, mobility means being nimble, staying light, and keeping your life flexible. And that means really not getting invested in stuff. I think it's a generational change too, but it's really hit me because I couldn't leave the farm and take everything with me. That would just be like reliving my history between new walls. It broke my heart to do it, but I think I had to break my own heart in order to like open myself up to this new life that I have right now, which is pretty cool.
What's your secret to a rewarding life?
Don't be sorry. Don't be sorry. You know, it's just a complete waste of time. Shit happens. Things go wrong. You can't help it. It happens to all of us. People die. People get cancer. Lives end. This is the design of the system. You know, the cycle of life, blah, blah, blah. So don't be sorry. You've got to have fun. I mean, what is the point if you're not having fun? You know, that's really my goal every day, is to do something that pleases me.
What's your definition of success?
I think our definitions of success change. I think it could be hormonal. At this point in my life, my definition of success is like whatever I want it to be. Ask me again tomorrow, because I don't really believe in success the way that I used to. Now I see life as part of a process and a flow and an ongoing series of events. To say something somebody else said beautifully, the process is the destination. And so success is in the moment. And there is no really big freeze frame of achievement that doesn't change. I just don't see success the way I saw it when I was younger.
Do you have sort of one moment that you think is the proudest career achievement?
Yes. I am really proud that I raised amazing cows. It takes a long time to raise amazing cows. You know, their gestation is 9 months. And you have to, like, breed them and plan it. And if you make mistakes, it takes, like, 2 years to see if you corrected it. And by the time I was finished breeding cows, my cows were gorgeous. And I feel like I did a really good job and proved it was possible to raise amazing animals with the tastiest beef you'd ever had on grass, grass-fed beef. That took years and years of effort. And I think I did a great job with that.
Is there a mantra that you live by?
I started with this mantra when I started blogging as a farmer. And I think of it sort of as a motto or a slogan, and it is live slowly, breathe deeply, and share the light.
Thanks for listening to the Passionistas Project podcast and our interview with Billy Best. Visit her website, billybest.com, to learn about her blog, It's Not Easy Being Fabulous, and her memoir, Crazy Wife Farm. And visit our website, thepassionistasproject.com, to see pictures of Billy and her days as a farmer. And be sure to subscribe to the Passionistas Project podcast so you don't miss any of our upcoming inspiring guests.